Feeling a bit rested? Good. That's how you should always listen to the teachings. With a bit of concentration and openness. And we acquire this openness, we foster this openness with a bit of meditation, a bit of mindfulness. So, what's the title of the talk? Okay, I better talk about mindfulness then. Right, okay. Everyday mindfulness, great. I just came up from London. I was invited to go to the Mindful Living Show. And when I was first invited to it through email, at first I thought it was some type of theatrical performance. When you say a show, it's generally a theater in America. Come to find out, it was what we would call like a convention or an exposition. And it was held in this a good sized hall, and they had booths of this and that, mindfulness this, mindfulness that, mindfulness tour, mindfulness, this headband that you put on when you meditate that lets you know you're meditating, I guess. You know, it had the elements of the crystals and therapies and, you know, all these things, mindful. The mindfulness thing. It kind of reminded me of the way back when it was the Zen and the art of, you know, fill in the blank. You remember those books? Yeah. Art of the motorcycle maintenance, the art of archery, of golf, of cooking and whatnot. And they had some, our lay order, the Order of Interbeing, had a booth there as well. They felt that, well, since our community is centered around the practice of mindfulness, it would be a good thing for them to show up. Yeah. And hence my presence. And I was there to give a talk and a guided meditation. And they had a lot of speakers throughout the day, and it was generally some really good talks too. I think I appreciated the talks more than all the booths. There were some neuroscientists, psychologists, and other people using the practice of mindfulness in whatever they're doing. So really, the sort of the essence I got out of the show was what we are calling now secular mindfulness, a mindfulness minus the Buddha statues and all the other aspects. And I was the only monastic there, and our approach is, well, in psychology, you have an issue like depression or PTSD, and they use the practice of mindfulness to help with those symptoms. And it's been proving pretty effective, enough for them to continue exploring and looking at other uses. So it's a technique. Or a therapy, right? Now, coming from the Buddhist tradition, we would never see it as a therapy or a technique. Mindfulness for us is part of this holistic aspect of life. So it's not something you pick up when you have difficulties and then when you're feeling better or doing better, you set it down and continue with your life. For us, mindfulness is something that is to be engaged throughout the day. 7 days a week, 365 days a year, for the rest of your life. It's a lifetime endeavor. It's a lifetime practice. And with the Buddhist teachings, is a lot more connected than just dealing with a particular issue, because there are moral aspects to it, ethical aspects to it. And people are not always comfortable when I bring up the idea of morality and ethics, but that does play a big factor in the practice of the Dharma. So our approach is a holistic, everyday practice. You might have heard of sayings like everyday Zen, nothing special Zen, ordinary Zen. You could use that with mindfulness. You know, it's nothing special. I'm sorry to tell you, but you took your time, I think paid out a little dough, to come here and listen to nothing special. You gotta laugh. So mindfulness is nothing special. You could ask, well, Brother Vu, what's up with the robes? That's another Dharma talk. So it's nothing special, but it encompasses everything. It encompasses everything, bringing it in to everything. As I drink a cup of water, being mindful of picking up the cup, being mindful of everyone staring at me while I take a drink, the movements, the taste of the very weak tea, light tea, putting it back down, the cup back down. In the same way, being mindfully aware of your presence, the presence of another individual. And how you perceive them at any given time. Being mindful of your reaction of me, of my presence. Being mindful that we're all sitting here in this church in Edinburgh, in Scotland, in the UK, on the earth, plummeting through space at very fast speeds. I don't remember the actual number. It's been a long time since I was in school. So bringing it in to our daily life. And just like any other practice, like the piano, practice makes perfect. Yeah. So the more we engage in this type of practice, the more we recognize it, the more we are engaged with it, the more that it becomes part of our bones and marrow. So let's kind of look at, what am I talking about when I say mindfulness? I think some definitions would be good, and explanations. So mindfulness is the English word used to translate the Pali Sanskrit term sati, S-A-T-I. And sati has two aspects to it. One, to be aware. Two, to remember. So our teacher often puts those two together, and to remember to be aware. To remember to be aware of something. instead of the mind going off on so many other tangents, so many other things. Because if you've noticed, our minds are quite busy. Right? Even when we're sitting down and relaxing, what's going on? We're all over the place, right? Maybe you noticed that while you were sitting here today in meditation, observing your abdomen going in and out. How many here had their minds go someplace else? Yeah, okay. So if you've done that, you're normal. It's normal. That's the nature of the mind. Okay. So mindfulness is a practice to help us develop a sustained attention towards something. Now, I like to add and emphasize the idea of remembering to be aware. Because quite often we get caught up in mindfulness is this state of mind. And if I'm not in that state of mind, I'm not being mindful. In one aspect, yes. In another aspect, no. Because mindfulness is a process. It's not a thing. It's a process. It's the process of going from a scattered mind to a collected mind. It's going from forgetfulness to being mindful of something. So if you're practicing right now in your life and you find yourself continually bringing your mind back to an object, for example, holding this cup, something as simple as holding this cup. And my mind goes off someplace else, I bring it back to this experience. And then it goes off, and then I bring it back to this experience. That's mindfulness. So if you feel like you're not getting anywhere, you have to keep bringing your mind back, keep bringing your mind back, keep bringing your mind back, and keep bringing your mind back. That's the practice of mindfulness. You're doing it right. So it's not always just attaining that type of concentration and sustained awareness or sustained attention. But mindfulness is the process of getting there, no matter how many times. Right? So if you felt pressure about it, knock it off. Don't pressure yourself. That's the process. It's the process. As we continue on that process, again, practice makes perfect, like on a piano or playing soccer, whatever you're doing, painting, work. The more you do that, the more conditions you are creating within you to have a sustained awareness. Okay. So why do I want to have a sustained awareness? Why do I want to be mindful? What are you people doing here? You know, why did you come into the door and come to this talk tonight about mindfulness, right? So why do we do this? And that's an important question. And this is a deep question, and it's an important question because how interested we are in any given thing determines how much energy we are willing to spend doing that, right? Going back to the piano, maybe you're when you were a child, your parents made you take piano lessons, and maybe you regretted that. you know, your heart wasn't in it. I'm doing it because Mom told me. You know. But putting our own aspiration in that question, why do I want to take up this practice? You know, we call that an aspiration. Why do we want to do this? Why do we want to do anything? Right. Hopefully we find some benefit. Right. Why do we bother sitting? Why do we practice sitting meditation? You know, why do I get up at 4:30 in the morning with snow on the ground to go to the meditation hall and sit? Why am I a monk? It's not easy being a monk. Why do we do what we do? And this is a very important question when we take up the practice. In a world, in a society, well, I should say more, in a society where we have so much, right? Might not be so much things, but we have access to books, to ideas. We have access, we have internet at our fingertips, the whole world. We have shelves and shelves of self-help books. Right? Oh, I have a problem. Okay, I'm going to pull that book out, read it, work with it maybe. And I used to do that. That didn't last very long. Yeah. It's easy to say, oh yes, I'm interested in mindfulness, or I'm interested in meditation, or even I'm interested in the Buddhist teachings. Okay, fine. But are you really going to get something out of it? Are you really going to apply it? Yeah. That's a big question. Yeah. So it's, you can look at it, oh, this stuff is interesting. That's nice. And then we go on our way, then, you know, do the same things we've done before, the same way before, as we call those habit energies. Or are we going to challenge ourselves a bit and take up this practice? Now, since you are all here, I'm going to make an assumption. Since you are all here, you gave up your evening, you came to the door. I'm assuming that you're all interested in mindfulness enough to say you want to try and practice something, an aspect of it. Yeah, I'm going to assume that. I might be wrong in some cases, but you're going to have to endure that this evening for about an hour or so. So this idea of mindfulness, this idea of an aspiration of what we want for our life. How do we want to live our life? That's a life aspiration. What kind of a person do I want to be? How do I want to be? Maybe you're confronted with things such as impatience. Maybe you jump to conclusions. Maybe you have some deep-seated anger. Resentment, or maybe not any of those things. Maybe you have something specific you're working on. Maybe it's just this general way of life that you find more happiness out of that. Yeah. So many different reasons that take us down the path in our life. So we pick up this practice of mindfulness, of being aware. Then we have to look at it as, how deep is my aspiration? Yeah. And that's, everyone has their own answer. everyone has their own perspective on their lives, because your life is different than your life, is different than your life experience, and your life experience, and your life experience. So we all interpret this differently. So for us, it's a complete life package. Mindfulness in our daily life, being aware in our life. And that's an important aspect. In the teachings, when we talk about being mindful, there's always that question of being mindful of what? Okay, there's not just mindful, just as there's not just consciousness. There's always consciousness of something, awareness of something, being mindful of something. And in the teachings, I'm not going to go through the whole list, but basically it ends up as just about everything within your experiential range or field, your field of perceptions. What you perceive. So there are different practices. For example, there's being mindful of sitting. Just as you're sitting in the pew, are you aware of how you're sitting? Am I aware of how I'm sitting? Mindful. The practice of mindful walking. When you walk, are you aware of your walking? Yeah. Eating, are you aware of eating, I still do it. I'm going to confess, I'm not always the best eating practitioner. Shh, don't tell my brothers. Yeah. Am I aware of the food I put in my mouth, or is it just going? Yeah. So this whole person mindfulness of being and connecting. So let's take this a little further in that question, why? Why? And there's a lot of answers to that. Typically in the Buddhist framework, the Bodhidharma, it's to help create more concentration or more sustained awareness. And why would we want more sustained awareness or a sustained attention? Well, when we do that, we don't have a mind that's all over the place, right? The untrained, we would call that the untrained mind. This is what we're actually doing. We're training the mind. And so it's the practice of training the mind from not being scattered or not being carried away by thoughts and emotions. Maybe it's like a fantasy, rather benign on our inner landscape. Maybe it's something we're jumping to conclusions about. Maybe we create ideas about someone or something that's not too nice, not too beneficial. And if we take a look at that realistically, with a little more objection, it turns out it's the silliest thing we've ever thought. It's like, oh, I'm totally wrong about this. Right? So this idea of using this awareness to see things in life directly. Again, when we bring our attention to something, the mind always takes that something and creates other things in the mind, right? For example, I don't know, maybe we look at this table And instead of seeing this table as it is, now I'm thinking, well, that's a nice design. It's kind of shaker-like in the style. I don't care much for the stain. It's a little too dark for my taste. You might think, oh, it's kind of flimsy with these thin legs. Or, hey, you know, this would look good in my house. You know, so we generate thoughts, and the ego pops in with me and mine, and with the me and mine becomes yours. Then all of a sudden, it's my table, not your table. I saw it first. Right? Yeah. So we do that whenever we bring our attention to some given thing. We look at a person, and I tell you, when I'm walking around the city, and I'm not wearing my long robe, I'm wearing just my short robe, people look at me. Yeah. Even, you know, when I wear my long robe, they really look at me. They're trying to figure out, what's up with this guy? You know, people have come up and asked me, what are you? I don't know, let me contemplate, you know. So we, you know, and then they see it's something from Asia, but I don't look Asian. I think maybe that's a lot of confusion there. So our mind comes up with all sorts of things because it's just the nature of the mind. So going back to this idea of sustained awareness, in mindfulness, this awareness is not just any kind of awareness. Okay. What I've been talking about, being aware of something, and when we become aware of something, things pop up, we think, we judge, we react. Wrong kind of awareness. In mindfulness, it's what we call an open awareness to something. It's the awareness of an object without the judgment, without the storyline, without analyzing, but it's an open awareness. It's sort of like, I know a good example. Going into a modern art museum, I like to use this. I like to watch my monastic brothers and sisters when they go into the museum. Then I can see who the real practitioners are. Okay. Because as you go into a modern museum, you might see like a Jackson Pollock. Who knows what a Jackson Pollock painting is? It's all those squiggly lines, different colors, and he usually paints very large murals. Early modernist. And that's all it is. It's these squiggly lines. And so you go in the modern art museum and you see all these types of art, aspects of art, different techniques, styles, but they don't look like something. You know, they don't look like a house on the prairie. They don't look like a landscape. And so I like to see people going into the art gallery, and they're trying to figure out, what is that? Is that a landscape? You know, is that a person? You know, instead of looking at just the color, the lines, the canvas, the tone, the shades, all these different aspects of the painting, we're trying to figure out, I think it's a house. I'm sure that's Edinburgh Castle. Right. Or, yeah, that reminds me when I was a child and I da 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 da. So it's like going into, now this is a good practice for you because you got a lot of great museums here. Going into the Museum of Modern Art and just looking at a painting as it is itself. It's So if it's a field of blue, don't even use the word blue. It's just a different color. Okay. So that open awareness that manifests as we practice mindfulness, being mindful of something. We're training our mind to look at something as it is instead of what people have told us it is. When we're born, we go through the educational system, our families and society, they tell us we need to look at this way. This is this and that is that. And so we're programmed to label things and to name things instead of seeing them directly. And this is where we find our inner freedom. Okay. When we can get beyond the bonds, the ideas of the way we're supposed to see something. Okay. We're supposed to react that way. I'm supposed to look at this particular way. Instead of these things that we've been trained to do, been trained to look a certain way, if we can put those down and challenge ourselves to look at something as it is, without all that baggage from our past and present, then we can find some freedom within ourselves. We become more what we would call a true person. This is the type of liberation and freedom, you know, the Buddha is talking about. The inner freedom that comes from being with X and allowing X to be X and not project my own self onto that. So as I come in contact with so many different people, right, and this is a big issue in this world because it's becoming a smaller and smaller world. How much do I project upon an individual? Yeah, instead of seeing them for who they are, I want to project on. Maybe it's their clothes, maybe it's their hair, maybe it's what they do for a living. Maybe it's their religion, or maybe it's their lack of religion, or maybe it's this or that, or the kind of car they drive, or the type of job they have. You know, whether they wear glasses or not. I'm sorry, but, you know, come on. Those glasses, seriously. Yeah, so we add on to our perceptions. So learning to put these things down, to let these things go, that takes mindfulness. Being aware, being mindful of the things of the mind and the things of the emotion that rather distorts our image of any given thing. And that creates our own traps. My father was, I had a very difficult childhood. My father was an alcoholic. I can say I was not a very happy child. I did not have there was some happiness I remember experiencing, but for the most part, it was pretty challenging. So I grew up looking at my father a certain way because of all that stuff. And fortunately, because of that, I had a very, not a very healthy look, not a very healthy perspective of my own self, right? That happens with alcoholic parents. So And it wasn't until I began to really explore, to take a look at and challenge myself. Wow, what's really going on? What do I really think about my father? Okay. And it wasn't until I lived with some pretty hard knocks as a very young man growing up that I got to the point of, okay, I need to make some changes here to be happy. And it wasn't until I changed my perspective of my father, because he wasn't going to change, but I myself transformed to look at him in another way. And that's when I discovered you don't have to like someone to love them. And that even though he has created so much pain and suffering in the family and in myself, I was able to find some freedom from that through like forgiveness, understanding that he had a very rough life as well. So changing and transforming our perspective of any given thing by bringing my attention to that. I could have continued on my life in a way of avoidance, right? We want to avoid the difficulties. But I found that that wasn't working. I found no happiness in that. So I had to bring my attention to my own difficulties and how I perceived my father. So this comes into an area that's most challenging when it comes to the practice of mindfulness. We want to say, we want to be open with any given thing in our lives, whether it's this cup or my neighbor, a loved one. But part of our mind, aspects of our mind, our habit energy, is we want to go towards the things we like, and we want to avoid the things we don't like, right? That's pretty common. Again, there's aversion and attraction. Staying away from things we don't like, gravitating things that we do like, getting things our way, in other words. And we do this on an unconscious basis. That creates quite a challenge. Quite a challenge sometimes. What do you do when you're supposed to be mindful of something you dread? When you're supposed to have this open awareness, this freedom on any given thing, and you are something you dislike very much is thrust in front of you. How can you be open and have that open awareness and not have all the stories follow you with that object? That's a challenge. That's a challenge. How do we stay open in the face of difficulties? Things we perceive as difficulty. Going back to what Bill has said about me being a news junkie, there's a lot of things going on in the U.S. I'm not very happy about. So many of us are confronted with these things. Now what? Can I get to the point in my practice where I can put that negativity down? The things that want to create more and more things, more and more hostility, more and more anger, frustration, impatience. Can I let go of those things and see things in a more equanimous way? Yeah, without the attraction and not without the aversion. That's quite challenging. Okay, mindfulness is starting to get challenging now, huh? Yeah. Or having to be nice to someone you dread. Yeah, now it gets interesting, huh? Yeah, not so much as being mindful of a nice little cup of tea, right? But we have to go in that direction. If you're looking at mindfulness as a way of freedom, an inner freedom, of an inner authenticity, you have to go in those directions. This is the practice. Yeah. So we work with those difficulties. And I want to talk a little about what it means to let go, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what that is. So in our practice, we talk about when we come in contact with something, we don't like it, for example. Okay, we just let it go. Okay, I have this feeling about this person. We'll use you as an example. I don't know you. You seem like a lovely person. So we meet. You say something I don't like, do something I don't like. I can get stuck in that energy of dislike and disharmony. I can build upon that. You're the worst person in the world now. You know, I don't like you at all, and this is why I should not like you. Right? We create that in the mind. We can be captured by that, or we can practice towards feeling good. Right? Having that ability to be in contact with difficult things, difficult situations, and be okay, and not get drawn into that. That's freedom. That's an inner freedom. One, it takes a bit of courage. But two, is this process we call letting go. Now, you meet someone, they say something you don't like. Okay, they said that, I'm gonna practice with, okay, I'm just gonna let it go. Okay, then continue on with your life. That's not a true letting go. If you can just instantly take something very difficult, shove it aside, and get on with your life, that's not letting go. That's stuffing it. That's suppression. That's avoidance. And it always comes back. It's the seeds are still there, and it always comes back in some other form. True letting go takes acceptance. Okay. There was a book, I forgot the author's name, Radical Acceptance. Atara Brock, I believe, yeah. Radical Acceptance. Accepting the difficulties in any given thing or person or event. Okay. Learning to have that acceptance. And that takes a bit of compassion, a bit of willingness to be open, willingness to be in the presence of something difficult. That's a bit more challenging. Willingness to accept the difficulties here. Just like my father, I had to accept the fact that, okay, he's an alcoholic, he's never gonna change, but he does love his son very much, and he did his best. And I can think of some very positive things about my father. At one point in my life, I couldn't. Later on, as I begin to heal and work with this and practice with this, yeah, I began to see positive things. Can we allow ourselves to have positive things about things we don't like? That's very challenging. But that is the practice. It's through this type of training that we eventually do come across this feeling, this sensation, this aspect of a freedom within us. We're not bound by our mind, not bound by our emotions. Okay. So this is an approach. This is a approach to life, to whatever we are doing. So we come in contact, something difficult, we realize it's difficult for us, we are mindful of our emotions, mindfulness of our sensations, mindfulness of our thoughts, to see where we're at with any given thing. And we accept that which is difficult in front of us. And once we can accept that, then we can release that. So letting go is first and foremost accepting what is, not wanting it to be something else. It might turn into something else, but at that moment, at that time, at that particular experience you're having, we can let it go. We can see it, be with it, receive it, explore it a little, understand it a little, then we can release that. So it's not just something that comes up, okay, put it aside. That's not true letting go. That's just creating more suffering for yourself. So as we encounter the challenges of everyday life, whether it's in our home life, our business, the things of society, the unfairness of society, the injustice of society. We're dealing with many things in the U.S., social injustice, economic inequality, growing bigger gap. The racial issues. We've got a lot, especially right now. This is the only way I feel I can be sane through it all. Yeah. A lot of people try to avoid the news. I think I'm the only one in the monastery probably who actually reads the news. listen to the YouTube blurbs of the shows, because I want to know what's going on. Okay. I'm willing to be exposed to that because I want to know what's going on. As I've talked about this practice of mindfulness, it's all been kind of inward, right? Inward process. Somewhere along that line of practicing with our inward practices, being aware of the interior, we become aware of the exterior, the world around us. Right? We become more, as we take up the practice of mindfulness, of being mindful of something as simple as a cup of tea, that naturally takes us to a place of being mindful of the people around us, perhaps our family, perhaps the neighborhood, a community, perhaps a city, perhaps a state, perhaps a nation, perhaps a species. And as our awareness grows, we have the capacity to allow our compassion to grow as well, and our patience as well. and our loving kindness as well. All these good, virtuous aspects of our humanity that's already present within us. You kind of say that I don't practice to gain more compassion. I practice to allow the compassion within me to manifest. Right? And we can only do that when we have a clear perception, when we let go of all the obstacles and the busy mindscape that inhibits us and takes us in directions that are not too healthy. Because in our natural state of unbusyness, our natural state of openness and love, right? We all have capacity to love. We all have capacity to want good things for strangers. We all have the capacity to care. We just have to allow that and not allow the obstacles to get in the way. And that's the practice of mindfulness. To be there for any given thing and to allow that space within you to grow and allow all those wonderful virtues to grow. I have to say, I've been a monastic 14 years, 15 years, something like that. Life gets better and better because I allow it to be better and better. And I don't buy into the things, the negativity of the mind that pop up occasionally. You know, even today, going out, visiting in a very beautiful city, beautiful weather, and yet there's something out there I can get grumpy about. But that's okay. It comes, it goes. 2 seconds later, I'm a happy camper. No, that's the way this mind goes. Don't buy into the stories. So whether it's engaging in a cup of tea, do I have the same awareness, the same compassion for a cup of tea as I would for a human? I think at one time I'd probably have more compassion for tea than a human. As I have two elder sisters, and I told one of them I decided to become a monastic a few years ago, she said, "Good, it'll get you off the streets." Yeah, she knew her little brother. Yeah. We also want to be mindful of the good things within us. Being mindful of the positive aspects within us. We're interesting creatures. We can sit down and have a cup of coffee with a friend and listen to their difficulties and their suffering. And we will give them the best advice that'll change their life, make them happy. The world opens up. There's rainbows and unicorns. And we treat ourselves like dirt. Yeah. We have a very negative view of ourselves. Okay. Isn't that strange? Isn't that strange? We need to be aware of our capacity to be compassionate towards our very own self. no matter how lousy of a person you are. I joke. That is so important. Being mindful of your positive aspects. Being mindful of, if you're a very impatient person, like I've, that was one of my big issues, being impatient. And I found that impatience, if I didn't deal with the impatience, it would grow into anger, frustration and anger. That was my route into anger. Right? So we could be, I could be aware of, okay, I was rather patient in this moment. It was strange. But I did that one time, right? And we become aware of the positive things, because we all have positive things. I'm sorry, if you have a real issue about yourself, you don't like yourself, I'm sorry, but you've got some positive stuff going on there. So don't listen to that story, right, that says you're not a competent person. Okay, that's just a story. And you, just because the mind creates it doesn't mean it's real. Yeah, don't get caught up into that. But we all have these positive attributes. So for you, find out, actively look for positive aspects about yourself. Even if you only see a little thing. Be with that. Experience that. When you go out into the world, make a note of the positive things about yourself or the positive things about that cup of coffee you're having or that person you're with, even if you don't like them. Looking at the positive aspects of that experience. What is that experience? And then kind of make that your friend. Yeah. And the more we look at these positive things, hey, I'm not such a bad person after all. That begins to be a part of us. And as it becomes a part of us, we begin to project that, begin to be that. So taking note, being mindful of the good things, the positive things, little acts of kindness. I've spent a lot of time in cities, especially New York, LA, and somewhat Chicago, our big cities. There's a lot of positive things going on there. We have this, New York has this rep as being a tough, cold place. There are a lot of lovely people in New York City. You just need to go up. If you get lost, you just go up to anybody and ask, hey, how do I get to, and they'll tell you. They'll practically take you there. But looking at the positive things, our minds naturally want to go towards the negative. Okay, this is something to be mindful of. By our nature, I was just listening to a seminar by neuroscientists and anthropologists of why that is. It seems to be quite, neuroscientists and psychologists, they know that our minds are automatically evolved or designed to be negative more than positive. It's sort of an evolutionary thing. So you don't get eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or trampled by a mastodon or something. Are you aware of that? Yeah. All right. Being mindful of the mind. Okay, so I have this bent for negativity. Okay. Well, if we're mindfulness of something, that empowers us, because mindfulness is an empowerment. Instead of going through life uncontrolled, emotionalism, ideas going on and on. We now have the capacity to make changes and to transform. Yeah, just by our awareness of that simple little fact. So being aware of the positive things, the nature of your mind. It certainly makes life much more pleasant. Yeah. You're much happier. That's a good thing. Even in difficulties, whether they're personal difficulties, difficulties in the family, in a nation, yeah. It makes it doable. Yeah, not getting drawn away. I have to tell you, coming from the US, it was a bit of a shock at our last election. But I have to tell you, I'm totally fascinated by what's taking place. It's not always pretty, but it's fascinating to see what happens next. And how people respond, and how the Congress responds, and how the voters respond, and the states, how they respond. Yeah. Having that fascination, not allowing myself to get caught up in all the details and all the difficulties and all the ugliness. Yeah, I know they're there. But being fascinated, curious about the situation. And I can only do that with my practice of mindfulness, of having that equanimous view of something. Yep, there's ugliness. Yep, there's some beautiful things too. So there lies your practice in mindfulness, applying the mindfulness throughout your day of whatever you are doing. It's very simple. When you wash the dishes, wash the dishes. When you walk, walk. When you talk to someone, talk to someone. Be there for them. Be there for whatever it is at that time. That's a true experience. A true experience. And this is where we find our truth in life. I call it truth to experience. So I'm not going to bend your ear anymore this evening, except for question and answers, if anyone has a question. And I thank you for your patience in enduring my talk.